Welcome, everyone, to Life Perspectives, a brand new production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. I'm your host, Gary Anderson, from St. Paul Parish in Westerville. St. John Paul II in Evangelium Vitae said, quote, "Society as a whole must respect, defend, and promote the dignity of every human person at every moment and in every condition of that person's life," unquote. And for that reason, this show is going to cover life issues across the entire spectrum of life, from conception to natural death, but with a heavy emphasis on abortion, since there exists no right as basic as the right to be born into this world and to live a life that gives glory to our Lord Jesus Christ. So each month we're going to have as our guest a local pro-life leader from among the myriad of life-focused organizations in Central Ohio in order to get their individual perspectives, including both the challenges they're facing and also, more importantly, the victories. So occasionally we hope to even maybe welcome a national luminary, but we'll see about that. Today's show is entitled The Pro-Life Landscape, where we'll be providing a broad overview of the many critical issues in the pro-life movement right here in 2019. And future shows are going to more drill down to spotlight the many individual issues of the day, and we'll feature special guest experts in studio. And with that, we welcome Beth Vanderkooy, the longtime executive director of Greater Columbus Right to Life. Beth is, we felt, the ideal person to help paint the general picture of what's going on in the current state of the pro-life movement in Ohio. So great to have you with us, Beth.
Good morning or good afternoon.
We are so pleased to have you here. Tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you to Greater Columbus Right to Life.
Well, I've been our executive director for about 6 years now. How I got there, of course, you know, we all take different paths in life. My background was more political, so I worked in the legislature and I lobbied for a few years. And
in Ohio?
Yes, here in Ohio for the agricultural community. And in 2007 and 2008, I became a convert to the Catholic Church.
I did not realize that.
Yes, I am a convert. And at the time, I was lobbying. And my sponsor was also our DRE at St. Mary in German Village, and he was the president of Columbus Right to Life, which is now Greater Columbus Right to Life, and he recruited me, and I came on as a member of our board of trustees and really assisting with some of the political work that we were doing at the time. And then a few years ago, I had a great job in lobbying, and I really loved it, but we were searching for a new executive director because our previous one, Ruth, had to move. Her husband was a minister in another denomination.
Yes.
And I had that, you know, maybe I should do this. I might be the person we're looking for. And I said, oh, no, Beth, you can't do that. You can't take the pay cut. You can't take the benefit cut. You can't do that. And so I had that conversation with myself a couple of times. And then one day, I resigned my position, and I called our president, and I said, hey, I've got a great new executive director for you. And he said, oh, Beth, you can't take the job. We can't pay you as much money as you deserve, and we don't have any benefits. And I said, well, a funny thing, I'm currently unemployed. So I started within probably 24 hours and hit the ground running, and it's been a really great opportunity to kind of see how, how God works to make different things come out in your life at different times. So I sometimes tell people that I did my politics, and now I'm doing my penance. So,
but you know, that political background really gave you a great foundation for what you're dealing with today in your position.
It is, but I will say it's kind of funny in a certain way because Greater Columbus Right to Life, we're currently operating as a C3, which means we're not heavily involved in the political arena.
Right.
Aside from, I kind of get into it just because I have such a background. But and the reason that is we still have a C4. We could bring it up if we need to. But a few years ago, the leadership of our organization really realized that here, particularly in Columbus, there are a lot of people who are and a lot of organizations that are dedicated to pro-life legislation. But there wasn't really as much going on to educate the people. Right. And to form good people.
Sure.
And you really do need both good laws, but you need good people as well. And so since I think 2012, we have been focusing on working with families and churches and community based organizations to really do heart and mind changing. in order to work with the laws. We need both.
And I must say, Beth, I've sat back and watched. I don't know if you knew this, but I had a background when it was still Columbus Right to Life. I was president back in about 2006, I think it was. And we were just barely hanging on. We were doing a lot of good things. But then Ruth, I had to step back. Ruth Yorston took over and really took it to another level. She did such a wonderful job. And then you came in. What I've seen you do with this organization is just so heartwarming. It's now a very, very influential organization. You've got your hands into so many different aspects of the pro-life movement today. So kudos to you with what you've done with that great organization.
Well, thank you. And I will say, you know, I'm just here as an instrument, and I mean this genuinely when I say we could not do what we have been able to do without our donors and without a tremendous group of volunteers. Most people don't realize this, but I'm our only paid staffer. We're trying to work on that. We're looking to maybe expand, but it really is a tremendous effort of volunteers and supporters and people who just are out there praying and believing in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's wonderful work. So again, congratulations on what you've done there and all the best for the future here. But before we begin, I thought it might be best, since we're really taking the 50,000-foot view here of the pro-life movement, we only have limited time this morning, I thought we'd quickly recap the essence of what this is all about. Roe v. Wade, of course, the notorious Supreme Court decision back in 73. It's greatly misunderstood, greatly mischaracterized. So the court handed it down on January 22nd of 73. But in order to justify it, something that I found just simply amazing to me is that they had to really use some legal sleight of hand, as I recall, Beth. Didn't they really stretch to cite the issue of a woman's right to privacy as the basis for the decision? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's where it comes from. So there were two main premises in Roe, right? The first is that within the shadows and the penumbras of the Constitution, there exists this right to privacy.
Right.
And then the second is that we don't really know when life begins. Now, of course, you see a lot of people think of Roe as being what is governing abortion law at the court, the judicial level. But then a few years later in the 90s, we had Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, you know, that is the court decision that kind of acknowledged that there's some right to regulate abortion after the point of viability. But also, abortion is still necessary in order to obtain equality for women. So this rather, if you think about it, unfeminist idea that women cannot be equal in society and in culture unless they have the right, and some might even say in some circumstances the obligation, right? Because rights tend to imply duties to abort their children.
Right.
And then even more recently, we've seen this continuing shift in abortion law, and it's gone in two directions, really. One is increasing the ability of states to regulate abortion for the health and the safety. And to regulate abortion post-viability. But then we've also seen a fundamental shift that it's not a right to privacy, but a right to the fundamental right of abortion, if mm-hmm. you might say so.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you get these decisions like Whole Health, which was decided, it was a Texas case related to Texas imposed some regulations on abortion clinics, and the result was a lot of abortion clinics shut down. And in that case, the court said abortion is such a fundamental right that a state does not have a right to even undergo regulation if it has the effect of shutting down abortion clinics.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this weird world where a rule could be in place for one type of ambulatory surgical facility, but because it's an abortion clinic, it doesn't count because
right.
You can't do anything that has the unintended consequence or the intended consequence even of reducing access to abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there have been some other positive decisions. Justice Thomas has this amazing has written some amazing things. And, you know, we're going to see what happens.
Sure.
It's a new day at the court.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's another misunderstood issue that I have encountered over the years also, Beth. That involves just what might happen if Roe v. Wade ever is overturned. It seems a lot of people believe that if that were the case, then nationally abortion is outlawed. But correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't what would happen be just that it would be sent back to the individual states? From there, they determine the legality of abortion, each state individually?
So correct. If what happened at the court were that they simply overturned the precedent of Roe v. Wade or any of these subsequent cases, it would return to the states for regulation.
Okay.
And, you know, that would be very problematic, even in a state like Ohio, where there's some constitutional there are some Ohio constitutional cases that imply abortion as being a right enshrined in our Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a little bit of it is also going to depend on how overturning Roe, if that's what happens, how that takes place. Because if it happens simply by saying this is a matter of state sovereignty and states are going to decide who is and who is not human and when human rights exist, then certainly that would turn it back to the state. If the decision is made more along the lines of the personhood of the unborn child, so if the court decides that an unborn child is a human, which is kind of a weird thing to say anyway, right?
Yes.
If they decide, I'll probably get some angry mail over that. But, but if the court determines that the unborn child is a human and therefore deserving of human rights, you certainly could have a situation where the unborn child is protected from any type of, you know, manslaughter, just in the way that a 2-year-old or a 20-year-old or a 100-year-old is. So it's a little bit difficult to say. But what I can say is before that happens, we have an awful lot of work to do on the ground in helping people to understand the beauty of the life that God has given us. There's a gorgeous line in the Catechism, and I quote it frequently, that we are stewards and not owners of the lives that God has entrusted to us.
Yes. Okay. Again, folks, you are listening to Life Perspectives right here in St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. It's a brand new production of St. Gabriel Radio, and each month we're going to spotlight the work, the challenges, and victories of pro-life organizations right here in Central Ohio, covering the entire spectrum of the cause for life, protecting the sanctity of life, again, from conception to natural death. Again, I want to welcome Beth Vanderkooy, who just so eloquently spoke, and we're so glad to have her here. Beth, once again, I want to welcome you to Life Perspectives.
Thank you.
You know, we're blessed here in Ohio with one of the strongest, and most influential state pro-life organizations in the U.S. today. That's Ohio Right to Life. In fact, I think Dr. Jack Wilkie was the founder, was he not? He was the leader of the pro-life movement many, many years ago.
Yes.
One of the early pioneers. And then, of course, you've got some wonderful local and local organizations like yourself, Greater Columbus Right to Life, right here in our backyard. How do you work with Ohio Right to Life? How do you carve your niche at Greater Columbus Right to Life and work alongside their work? How do they differ?
Right. So we are separate organizations. We have separate boards of trustees. We have separate funding. We don't commingle. Sometimes we work together. Sometimes we don't. I would say that it's a little bit confusing, right? Because Right to Life seems to imply that we're all chapters and affiliates, and but it's such a common name that's not necessarily true. I would say that we are an independent organization located here in Central Ohio. We particularly serve 8 counties: Franklin County, the surrounding counties, and Morrow County. But we also extend programming out really within a lot of areas of the diocese where maybe there is not an established pro-life organization. And we're really focusing on that grassroots advocacy and education. So we're going out to the churches and we're doing programs. And we bring those, by the way, at no cost to the church. That's what our donors support us to do. And not just Catholic, mm-hmm. Protestant churches, if they'll have us. We do maintain that our program is in line with Catholic teaching. Mm-hmm. So you never have to worry that we're going to show up and start pushing, you know, contraception or any of these other things that fall out of line with Catholic teaching. But we bring all of that out, and we're really focusing on educating that the community, the church, and also bringing a spirit of prayer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Abortion is fundamentally a spiritual matter.
Yes.
And one of the things that I think we've done so successfully is to bring prayer to the clinics. And we've seen that. We can talk about the abortion numbers here mm-hmm. locally and how mm-hmm. they compare to the, mm-hmm. the state. If I were pressed, and I don't like to speak for other organizations, I think they should speak for themselves, but I would say particularly in the last few years, the last decade, Ohio Right to Life has become more of a lobbying entity.
Right.
They're less of a grassroots Agreed. Organization mm-hmm. like you might think from your time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are, you know, some people really like that because it gives them a lot of influence at the state house. Some people kind of miss the days when it was the, you know, Jack Wilkie and going out and taking the slideshow to churches
sure.
and presenting the slides.
Much of what you're doing today
yeah.
in Greater Columbus Right Block.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a slightly different model. But also, we're both here in Columbus. Our offices are only a block and a half apart. A lot of people don't know this, but about a year ago, we moved our office downtown. Downtown Columbus, and we're now right next door to the headquarters for Planned Parenthood. That's been kind of fun. We've put up signs in all of our windows that say things like, pray to end abortion, and you don't have to do this, and we'll help you get out.
That's great.
And I think they've gotten some new window treatments on that side of the building. So
that's great. Gotta love that. Speaking of the abortion numbers, now I understand there's some pretty good news to share with our listeners about the statistics right here in the Diocese of Columbus as well as Franklin County. So go ahead, tell us the good news.
Yeah, absolutely. So anytime we talk about abortion numbers, obviously it's with the reality that here in the state of Ohio, we still saw 19,213 yeah. Oh, yeah. abortions. And any more than one is too many. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of work to do. So abortion statistics in Ohio are measured in two ways. They're measured according to where the abortion was performed, and they're only performed in a handful of counties, basically the cities, and then also where the mother reported living when she had the abortion, so her county or her zip code of residence. And so using this each year, I track, and what we saw was that last year, so between 2017 and 2018, the number of abortions performed here in Franklin County reduced by 1,138, which is phenomenal, mm-hmm. particularly when you take into account that statewide, the number of abortions fell by 468. So compared to the other areas of the state, you know, we had just a phenomenal drop. Now, of course, there are a few things that went into that, including a temporary closure of one abortion clinic, right? So the next thing you have to be concerned about is I'm not excited that abortion gets pushed out of our community. So it still is of concern to me if a woman from Franklin County or Delaware County has that abortion, she's just going to Cleveland.
Right,
I don't take any false joy mm-hmm. in it happening, you know, in the horrible thing happening in another location. So I actually pulled out the abortion statistics for the diocese as a whole. And what I found is that here within the Diocese of Columbus, keep in mind 468 fewer abortions across the state of Ohio, 402 of them on women who lived in Ohio, we actually reduced our number of abortions here by almost 300, 296 fewer abortions. So 76% of the reduction in abortions on Ohio women happened here in the Diocese of Columbus.
Wow.
And to that, I say, you know, thanks be to God. Now, we still have a lot of work to do, because what that also means is that in the last decade, 50,000 babies died in our 23 counties here within the diocese.
Wow.
50,000
wow.
in
yeah.
10 years. Mm. So, you know, but here in Central Ohio, we only saw a handful of numbers of counties where there was actually an increase over the last year. We saw, I think, one county where there was an increase over the last 10 years, and we've already reached out to those pastors and talking to another organization that's near and dear to your heart, the Knights of Columbus. We've been
mm-hmm.
collaborating
oh, yeah.
on how to get some additional resources out to those counties, particularly the smaller counties where sometimes it might be easier to look at the total number of abortions and say, oh, you know, this county only has 8 abortions. That doesn't compare with Franklin County, where there's thousands. But it still is important because if that's a much smaller county and we're seeing a concerning trend, we want to get our hands around that, and we want to help. We want to help figure out what is influencing that and how can we help connect the community better. You know, maybe it's working with the Knights to get an ultrasound in that community if their pregnancy help center doesn't have one. Maybe it's connecting the schools to some abstinence education, you know. And so what is it that we can do to really help that community within the community do a better job of reaching out to a woman in crisis?
Sure. And you mentioned what the Knights call the ultrasound initiative. In fact, I was involved with that closely my many years as the state pro-life director for the KOC. That's when they first kicked off the program. Since then, in about 10 years, Beth, they have placed over 1,000 free ultrasound machines to qualified pregnancy care centers across the U.S. In fact, several of them right here in Columbus, women's care centers, received two or three of them at last count. But a few of the individual councils have also done it, whereas the regional group here in Columbus, which represents about probably 60 councils in this area, they call it the Greater Columbus Chapter, they spearheaded placing two or three at women's care center. I think PDHC might have gotten one, too, and up in Delaware. That particular pro-life endeavor is really saving lives on a daily basis. Thousands and thousands of babies have been saved. When you look at the statistics, supposedly about 85 to 90% of people who have the opportunity to see a sonogram, an ultrasound of their baby in utero before they have an abortion. These are women who were seriously considering abortion, are having a change of heart and having the baby. Does it get any better than that?
No, for us, it maybe gets a little bit better than that. And I will tell you, you know, our volunteers are going out and they're praying at the abortion clinics during their open days and their open hours. And we talk to a lot of women, and a lot of them walk in, and they're support people as well. A lot of them walk in, you know, some of them aren't very happy with us. A small number choose to talk to us. And of those who choose to talk to us, an awful lot of them still go in to that abortion clinic. And I will say there is nothing better than something like happened to our volunteers a few months ago. And that was one of our volunteers was out praying with another volunteer. That duo hadn't been out at the clinic at the same time for 18 months. It was 18 months ago that they were out, and they were out there praying, and a car stopped, and a woman with a 5 or 6 year old and a toddler stepped out and said, "Hey, I remember you. I remember your curly hair, and I remember you. And you were out here praying the day that I went into the clinic. And I talked to you, and I went into the clinic anyway. But when we went home that night, my husband and I talked about it, and we thought we had to do this because of money, and we thought we had to do this because we had no family. And just seeing you out there praying, it told us we couldn't do this. We couldn't do this because it was our baby and we loved her." And so that day, one of our sidewalk counselors got to hold the baby. We've got a great picture. Maybe I'll send it over to your social media. But got to hold the baby. And just to know that it was 100% the prayers of a pro-life person is what brought that. And it also brought that family, you know, they started going to church again. They started talking about their guardian angels. You know, and so that is the best, because we've not just saved a baby, but we've transformed families and transformed lives.
That's just wonderful. And since time is drawing a little bit short here, Beth, let me just throw this out there to you. What are your major challenges at Greater Columbus Right to Life right now? What are your biggest victories? And finally, what can our listeners do to support your organization?
Absolutely. Well, our greatest challenges, I'm not going to turn this into a financial plea, but obviously money makes the ministry. And sometimes we have to let go of more options, opportunities than we can act on just because of resources, be that volunteer, be that hiring additional staff, whatever the case may be. We also really struggle from volunteer burnout and fatigue. So if you've been thinking, you know, maybe I have a role here, maybe I have a skill, maybe I have a talent, I could really use a bookkeeper. You know, these sorts of things. But our biggest opportunity is the opportunity to hear what I'm saying today and think, our church would love to host you. We'd love to have you come out, bring a program, and not just about abortion, about end of life. Maybe we'll come back and talk about it again. But
we will
excited. Going to be launching a new end of life program to really help people understand Catholic bioethical teaching on end of life and to execute advanced medical directives that conform with Catholic values.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge. That is absolutely huge. I'll just give a quick pitch. Every person over the age of 18 should have a healthcare power of attorney.
Agreed.
And give me a call and we'll help you connect to those resources.
That's great. And if we had more time, I'd ask you your sense of what's going on with the battle against, the Down syndrome babies being aborted in the womb. Because that, we'll talk about this in the future show, but that's a genocide going on right now, isn't it?
It sure is.
90% of babies are being aborted when they're diagnosed with Down syndrome, from what I hear.
That is true. And in some places, it's closer to 100%. I will put out a quick pitch. You know, if you're into social media, you can go onto our Facebook page. And we tend to follow these things, current legislation, as they're happening. We do that. And you can also, sign up, go to our website. It's gcrtl.org, like Greater Columbus Right to Life.org. Sign up for our e-news. I don't mail out that often, but what we do is really good, solid content.
Fantastic. Well, you've been listening to the inaugural edition of Life Perspectives, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820, as we spotlight the work, challenges, and victories of pro-life organizations right here in Central Ohio. And we're covering the entire spectrum of life, from conception to natural death. We've been privileged to have, once again, in studio, Beth Vanderkoy, Executive Director of Greater Columbus Right to Life. Beth, thanks so much. It has been wonderful. We're going to have you back to talk about end-of-life issues in the future. And you take care. I'm your host, Gary Anderson, inviting you to join us again for the next edition of Life Perspectives, 5:30 p.m. on December 21st and 4:30 p.m. on December 22nd. Thanks again for joining us on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820.